Anderson heaving one down the sideline, and he's got Cass Allen.
Listening to the Bruin Bible. This is your host, Will Decker, bringing you UCLA football content all throughout the year for LA Football Network.
Bruin Bible, what is up? We have a very, very special edition today. We are doing a crossover episode with our friends, you know, the people at What's Bruin. We got regular guests of the show, Mike Regalado. He's been on here so many different times. Iron Mike, how are you doing today, brother?
Good. Thank you for having me back on again.
Dude, we're stoked to have you. We got a brand new guest on, his co-host from the What's Bruin show. I met him at Pac-12 Media Day. Great dude. Big Strokes fan, so he got a lot of points in my book. Mr. Jake Merrifield, how you doing today, brother?
I'm good, man. I'm very happy to be on the show. Thank you for inviting me on.
Dude, we are stoked to have you guys. And as much as I am stoked to have you guys, we do have to recap this heartbreaking loss that UCLA was dealt at the Rose Bowl this past Saturday, a 48-45 shootout. We're talking about close to 1,200 yards of total offense from both sides. Not a lot of defense being played on both sides. I want to just kind of start with you, Mike. Where did you watch the game? Were you at the game, or who did you watch it with? What was kind of the game day experience for you going into a UCLA-USC Classic, if you will?
You know, I was up in the press box, and, you know, got there a little early. There were some friends that were there. I actually got, you know, friends some tickets. You know, people were like, oh, I want to go. And it was last minute. So I'm like, okay, I might know some people here and there. Go meet up. It was a great atmosphere beforehand. The most people I've seen at the Rose Bowl tailgating all season long. And obviously it was sold out. even though it had banners up there.
It's the best crowd in years.
Harps, yeah. Best atmosphere. And, you know, just aside from the result of, you know, for us that covers UCLA, just a great game. I mean, it didn't hit me in the moment, but a lot of people were talking about it afterwards that this is probably one of the best UCLA-USC games, you know, ever in the series. It's just unfortunate that, you know, it comes down to, you know, UCLA finally gets a stop, about a minute and 12 seconds left. It's possible that DTR can take him down. They were doing it and then let down. So aside from that, just a great atmosphere. It was a really good game.
Bummer.
Crowd looked electric, to say the least. I was actually tailgating parking lot pregame. We did a live show, and then I watched at a bar and just, you know, sunkenly just drove home, you know, after that, and just was very, very depressed about the loss. Jake, how was your game day experience? You know, were you at the game yourself? Were you tailgating like LAFB was there?
Yeah, you know, I was at the game. I didn't come in until, you know, probably about an hour before kickoff. Normally, you know, I get there minutes before kickoff and just like cruise right into the game. But obviously for this, you knew it was going to be crowded. So I got there a little bit earlier. And yeah, just like Mike said, it was a great atmosphere. It's the most crowded that place has been in years, since before COVID, really. And it's an SC-UCLA game. So if you've ever been to any of those, you know that you're going to get your share of obnoxious fans on both sides. And where we were sitting, we had plenty of obnoxious SC fans. Although one thing I'll say, I was very happy that it was a mostly Bruin crowd. Like, there's a lot more Bruins there than Trojans. There wasn't the half red and half blue that we've seen in years past sometimes. But there were plenty of obnoxious Trojan fans just, you know, anyway. And then there were a few Bruins that had a little bit too much to drink, maybe at your tailgate. I don't know, Will. But they came strolling in, and they were probably in no shape to watch a game, but they were in plenty good shape to start yelling at people. But it was fun, though. I mean, that's a kind of a unique thing about the Crosstown Showdown. So that part of it was a check. Great atmosphere. And then the game, you know, played out how it played out. You know, the Bruins had a prime position in the game. They were playing so well, and then they kind of let it slip away in the middle part of the game there, and then tried they had a chance to get it back at the end, and it just, you know, they came up short. But it was obviously a horrible game for all of us Bruin fans because they lost. But if you were, you know, if you weren't partial to the other team in this game, it was a fantastic game.
Fantastic game indeed, and it was such a gut punch, but if we can kind of remove ourselves from the situation a little bit in our Bruin ties, I'm really proud of what we put out there on the football field and the chance we had at the end to, you know, kind of make a run. And, You know, that starts with the guy who played his final game at the Rose Bowl and Dorian Thompson Robinson, a game of really high highs, some really low lows, 390 yards of total offense, 6 touchdowns, matched his total from last year's USC game. I'll go right back to you, Jake. I just want your assessment of DTR's performance. Grade from A to F. What would you give him on this game and just your thoughts of DTR's kind of career as a UCLA Bruin?
Well, I think just because of the turnovers, you have to lower his overall grade, right? So I would say something like a B minus or something, just because you can't have 4 turnovers in a game and not, have a great negative impact on the game. But with that being said, I said this on my show, and it was that you could, if you wanted to view this with the most negative lens, you could say, oh, DTR melted down again. The old DTR, the DTR that we first saw in his first couple of years, where it was like he was just a turnover machine and making negative plays at the wrong times. But you can't characterize, I don't think you can characterize him in this game like that. He was heroic. He was a warrior. He had a chance to win at the end. He came up short, and that sucks, I think he was the true leader of the team, and I'm still proud of the effort that he put forth. And it's one of those things where he had the turnovers. I thought the worst one that he had was the second interception going into the half. That ended up giving SC a chance at the giving them a chance to get within one. But the fumble, I can't really knock him down for that one too bad, because he just got crushed. That was the USC equivalent of the Anthony Barr on the Matt Barkley hit. The first interception he threw, that's one you're going to get. And then the one at the end of the game, that's one where you kind of got to flip a coin. I think all of us thought that he was going to make the plays to at least tie the game, but when the game is on the line like that, sometimes stuff like that happens. So I'd say a B minus. Sorry to get long winded on you.
No, I think that's a fair assessment. And we got the total DTR experience. And like the highs for me were those 3 straight back-to-back drives when they were matching USC going into the 3rd and 4th. And I thought I was witnessing maybe the greatest offensive game, I've ever seen as a fan of football. It was the greatest offensive performance in the USC and UCLA game in terms of total points scored and total yards. 3 straight drives, 17 plays, 215 yards, and 3 touchdowns. And it was capitalized by that big Kaz Allen touchdown that got him within 3 on that. But, it was just the head-scratching turnovers again for a guy like DTR. And, I can't take this comparison because it was my co-host, Jamal Madney, but I love it so much I'm going to reference it here. He compares him to Russell Westbrook, where the highs are very high, but the lows are, somewhat, bonehead mistakes, things that are easily, can be easily cleaned up. The last interception he was throwing, into double coverage, not a throw that I would have liked to have seen from a guy like DTR. The pick before the half that you mentioned, Jake, very frustrating given the time, the circumstances, the lead at that point, very frustrating. And I would probably lean around a C+, B minus as well, because we knew it was at stake. We had a 14-0 lead to lead this game off, and it just felt like we had it that night. And we, for some reason, we didn't get it done. DTR, a UCLA legend. I want to just tip my cap to him as a great competitor, a great guy that gave his all for UCLA, but unfortunately was not enough. Mike, give me your takes on DTR and his legacy at UCLA.
Really quickly, you kind of hit on it. It's after the game, I thought this game comprised the best and the worst of DTR as we've seen over the years. Yeah, those turnovers, they just hurt. But then you turn the ball over 4 times and you still put up 45 points. That's pretty ballsy. And that also means that you're playing a defense that's not doing very well. and because, like you say, they were just kind of going back and forth like Rocky and Apollo Creed. And I think he accounted for 6 touchdowns in that game. Like just the metal this kid has, I've joked that I've nicknamed him Reznor, because the kid is tough as nails, and he is. It's like he smashes his hand on a helmet and he's still throwing balls out there. Now, that can't be an excuse where your hands hurt. So, oh, you threw an interception, but the fact that he didn't make that an excuse. He said that, that those were on him. It just shows, not only the toughness of this kid, but just kind of what a stand-up leader he has been. And it's, it's unfortunate, you know, an end of an era, a kid who's been there 5 years, has taken his lumps and, you know, goes out successful, but not as successful as they hope. You know, they don't, they're out of the Pac-12 contention. They're out of Rose Bowl contention, but they still got two more games against Cal. And then, whatever, you know, what, however the chips may lie with a whatever bowl they go to. But yeah, it was a very special 5 years to have DTR with UCLA. And yeah, it's, you know, she's definitely going to be missed. But yeah, it was just kind of an up and down performance. And yeah, I'm there with Jake. I'm giving him a B minus, and just because I thought what he did good just kind of surpassed all the mistakes and turnovers.
Yeah, and just a hell of a performance. 81 yards on the ground, 2 touchdowns, 309 yards passing, 4 touchdowns. Unfortunately, the 3 interceptions we referenced earlier in the fumble. That kind of leads me to my next question. And, you know, coming into that Arizona game, we had such high expectations for this team. You know, just beat Arizona, beat USC. There's a real chance we go to the Pac-12 championship. Who knows what can happen if we beat the likes of Oregon, we can beat SC. I kind of want a grade on the season thus far from you, Mr. Mike Regalado. I'll start with you. A to F, it has just been kind of tough these last few weeks. It's kind of knocked it down to a point where I'm looking at this team and just kind of the defensive woes that have really started since the ASU game 3 weeks ago and just feeling like it's just kind of imploded a little bit. I'm at, you know, a C plus now, given the schedule that we've had, given the circumstances that we've had. What is it for you, Mike? Because I'm a little disappointed in our UCLA Bruins.
Yeah, I mean, the offense is still top-notch, one of the best in the country. So automatically, I give that an A+. But then you look at the defense, and that drags the grade point average down a bit. I would say the defense, I would give them like a, you know, a D. You know, they've not just, you know, I like to look at the stats, but also just the eyeball test. They were lights out in some games, and some games they just disappeared. You know, the last two games, you know, especially that were, you know, very key, you know, it the season was on the line and they, you know, unfortunately couldn't make anything of it. So when you bring those together and special teams, I think I'm going to go with like a B, probably a little bit generous, but I just think that they have done really well. All the good, everything good about this season far outweighs everything bad. You know, they're, you know, 8-3 right now. And it's really bizarre because they're tied for fifth place, and that doesn't say that UCLA is a bad team. I think it actually says how good the Pac-12 has been this year. You can't discount the wins against Washington and Utah, which both are, you know, up there, you know, in all the rankings. But at the same time, you get beat pretty badly at Oregon. You lose by just 3 points against USC, and that Arizona game, that's a head scratcher. So I'm going to go with a B for the season.
B for the season thus far. And I'm going to send it down to our buddy, Jake. Jake, give me your grade for the season. And I want to get your take. Do you think the absence of Bill McGovern being ill, you know, I'm not really sure what's going on with him. I don't think anyone within the UCLA program or, you know, covering the UCLA program is aware of totally what's going on with Bill McGovern. Our thoughts and prayers out to him. What is your grade so far in the season? And do you think the defense's collapse is due in large part to Bill McGovern not being a part of the program these past 4 weeks?
Yeah, I know I have a little bit of a minority opinion on the defense, but number one, as far as my grade for the season for the Bruins this year, I think it's somewhere around a C+, B-, and that's just because, you know, they did have some super high highs. You know, they got into the top 10. They were on the cusp of, you know, putting themselves in real contention to go to the playoff, and then just the air was completely let out of the balloon. And, you know, so I think, you know, they went from having just a stellar, you know, special singular season to having just another decent season. And unfortunately for the Bruins, the last 20 years, you know, the Bruins in, you know, in this millennia, they're just not, they haven't had too many of those. Right. So I would throw this right in with, you know, maybe just under like the best, seasons that Mora turned in, and maybe just a little bit above the, you know, the 10-2 season where they went and beat Northwestern in the bowl. And that's just because there was some real stakes in the season and they just came up short. Whereas I look at the 2005 season where they went 10-2 and beat Northwestern, they were always never going to go on to big things in that. They were always just kind of always kind of skating along by the skin of their, by the skin of their teeth, you know? And then in the Mora years, they didn't really have any real true stakes there, even though they got inside the top 10 in a couple of those years as too, but they were always the second or third best team in the Pac-12 behind Oregon or Stanford or whatever combination of those teams there were. This year they had their chance and they came up woefully short, it turns out. And it started with the loss to Arizona. And that is just a damn shame. And it turned, like I said, a chance for a very special season into just a okay season. That's a bummer. So C plus, B minus, I would say, as far as like what the season goes, you know, regardless how it turns out now against Cal and whatever bowl game they end up going to. And then as far as the defense goes, guys, I just don't know. I mean, they played Arizona and then they played SC. Arizona has a pretty good offense. We knew that going in. They gave up a little bit more than Arizona typically scores, you know, I think like three or four more points than I think Arizona average, like, you know, maybe 30, 32, and they give up like 34, 35, right? In that game. I can't remember the exact score. The offense only scored 28 points in that goddamn game. I'm sorry. That is not going to get it done. Okay. The offense came up short against Arizona, in my opinion. And that was because they were in that weird, like, is this the conference season or is this the non-conference season? What are we doing here? Are we kind of screwing around? We don't have Kaz Allen. We're going to throw horizontally the whole game and it is not really getting anything done and only put up 28 points. To me, the Arizona game is solely on the shoulders of the offense because we knew what the defense was. They're mediocre to bad, but they played mediocre to bad and gave up a typical game to Arizona. And I'm sorry, but turning to the SC game, I kind of have the same opinion about it. You know, SC has put up, you know, with the exception of like Oregon State, and I think one other game, maybe Washington State didn't get played, and they were in like, they're in the 20s against Oregon State, right? Or the teens, and they're in the low 30s against Washington State, maybe. Other than that, they're putting up 40 to 50 points on everybody. And they put up 48 on the Bruins. But then again, the Bruins stopped them. The Bruin defense allowed the Bruin offense to get to a 14-0 lead in the first quarter. And then the Bruin defense got the stop at the end of the game and gave the Bruins a chance to win the game. And when the game really got sideways for the Bruins, it was in the middle of the game when the Bruins were committing three turnovers, an interception, and a fumble. And the Bruins got outscored, I want to say 24-3 from, you know, about 4 minutes left in the first half till about 6 minutes left in the third quarter. They were outscored like 24-3 or something. It might be 28-3, 24-3, something like that. And so I don't think the defensive performance really changed from earlier in the season. I thought they could be pretty good or they could be pretty bad, not as horrible as they were last year, but not, you know, not very good. And I thought they've been pretty consistent. And I thought that, you know, in the games when the Bruins really had their letdowns, the last two games, it was more on the offense than on the defense. You know, and like I said, I think that's a minority opinion, but I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, and I think it's fair because I think my opinion can change on the overall season. You know, I gave it a C+, B-. If you win the next, let's say you beat Cal, you win the bowl game, we're tied for the all-time wins record in a singular season.
Which is crazy.
For the UCLA team. I mean, that's nuts. And I think, you know, there is some credence to the out-of-conference schedule being what it was, but you got to remember Michigan pulled out of the game. And the South Alabama team we win, I don't know if the rest of the country is following them. They're the first team in the Sun Belt. They're 9-2. This is not a bad football team. They still have a game next week against Old Dominion. They could be 10-2 heading into a bowl game. Could be an 11-win team if they claim their bowl game championship as well. But I think the issue I have, Jake and Mike, is the defense. And Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And under the Chip Kelly era, who I'm a defender of, I think the offenses are fantastic.
Us too.
You look at the total defense and just the numbers in his time here, you know, 26-28 record now in year five. Total defense from 2018 to 22, in consecutive numbers, it's 104th, 117th, 73rd, and 74th, and now it's back at 90th. And I'm with you on some of those points. I think the Arizona team, they were a top 10 passing attack when they came in nationally ranked in terms of yards per game. And you took a look at the Jacob Cowings, the T-Max, the Jaden Delora's out there making plays. They're a very solid team. And, you know, UCLA did get to their credit. They got a stop to give DTR the ball at the end of the game with our guy Liatu Latu. but it's just defense, no matter what has happened, we, you know, we're under the crutch of Jerry Azzanero for years. Now we have Bill McGovern come in, and it just has not changed. And, you know, the defensive woes were on display. I know USC's a great offense, 649 yards of total offense. And that is, I mean, that's just an absurd number. Jake, are you under the, you know, kind of canopy that is, I'm with Chip Kelly, I want him to be the coach of the future? Or are you on the camp where it's, hey, if this guy doesn't fix the defense by next year, we're going to the Big Ten. This is going to be way more difficult than what the Pac-12 is on paper. What can we do about that? What is your stance on Chip Kelly?
Well, I'll tell you what, it's a lot more, it's a lot softer than it was, you know, 2 games ago. Before I was like, okay, you know, they've done enough to see how Chip can manage the transition into the Big Ten, let alone next year. That's how I was feeling before they started, before they played Arizona and SC. Now, you know, I could really be, you know, convinced of anything. I don't think they're going to get rid of Chip Kelly unless they lose the next 2 games, you know, by ugly scores or whatever. And then you're back at, you know, in an 8-win season and you know, and all that. But I feel like Kelly's going to be there next year, and we'll get to see what, you know, how he kind of rebuilds this team after this. You're really going to be losing so many guys. But, you know, once again, I'll just state this as far as the defense goes. It is absolutely true that in his first 2 years, that defense was poor, pitiful. It was worse in the conference on pretty much all the metrics. It was, you know, bottom two, bottom three in the conference. And the one I like to look at just right out, you know, just to make it simple, is something like yards per play. 2018, they were 11th in the conference. 2019, they were last in the conference in yards per play, giving up, you know, 6.5, 7 yards per play. But for the last 3 years, the 2020, 21, 22, and I know two of those years were with Azzanero, and then this last year, half with McGovern and half with Clancy Pendergast, you know, they have been middle of the pack as far as most of the defensive statistics. And they have been, a decent bend but don't break sort of defense. And to me, given the type of offense that Kelly plays and the very productive offense he has out there, but also an offense that doesn't use up a lot of time and leaves the defense out there for a long period of time, I thought that UCLA's defense has done a decent job of not giving up big plays, SC game excepted. Obviously, that was the first game they really let loose this year. I think that the style of defense they're choosing to play, it is fine if you can manufacture all that offense. You know, would it be great if they could go out and get, you know, a guy like, you know, like if they could play like the SEC, or they could play, you know, like some Big Ten defense or whatever, more like the SEC, and they'd rather have that defense. But, you know, that's probably not something that's going to happen. And guess what? It doesn't really happen across the Pac-12 at all. So I don't know how realistic it is. I think it is realistic for the way that Kelly recruits, both, you know, high school and in the transfer portal. If they can cobble together a mid-range Pac-12 defense, that should be good enough to have a pretty good team, considering that his offense has just been pretty darn good every single year. And I think that's a reasonable goal. And then maybe some year they luck themselves into a top four defense or so, and then you really are, you know, cooking with gas, with propane at that point, you know. And as far as the transition to the Big Ten, I don't think the Big Ten's ready for the offense that SC and UCLA are going to bring. And so, you know, they can suck on that, and we'll be scoring points while they're sitting there going 3 yards in a cloud of dust.
I like the positivity, but before I go to Mike, I just want to push back a little lightly. You know, the secondary has just been the Achilles heel of this team for so long. They rank 117th now in passing yards per game out of 131. So they are allowing these big passing plays come in. And, you know, you go back to the Oregon game, you know, they were 6 of 9 on third, or 6 of 10 on third downs in that game. And then they were 3 of 3 on fourth down conversions. So they could not get the stops when they needed to. So I just think from my perspective, the front seven may be as good as it's ever been under the Chip Kelly era. We've talked about Liatu Latu.
You know, I think that's true. Rushing.
He's phenomenal. The Murphy twins, I'm such a big fan of. I think those guys have a future in the NFL. Muwasu, players like this. But, man, that secondary is just so tough. And, you know, I just – for me personally, I just need to see some improvement there. I thought some of the likes of Kirkwood and some of the seniority back there with the Mo Oslings and Blaylocks, we were finally going to get, you know, a decent secondary, a top 60 or 70 secondary. It just hasn't come to fruition. So that's the only area I'd push back on that. Mike, give me your thoughts on the defense for UCLA, because I think this has a chance to really cost Chip his job. And it's crazy we're saying this, because he's an offensive genius when it comes down to it. And you've seen the numbers he's been putting up this year.
Yeah, it's year five. It shouldn't be this way. I mean, I got the first question in the press conference, and I just flat out asked him, how do you account for 600 and, you know, whatever yards in year five? And, you know, he was like, well, how do I account for losing by three? It's like, okay, yeah, that's fine. But some of those yards, some of those points, if they weren't there, they would have got the win. The defense, as I said earlier, it's just been up and down, visibly, statistically. Good in one game, not so good in the other. It's been better, but under Bill McGovern. But then, you know, the defensive coaches have helped out in the last four games where McGovern hasn't been able to coach. So I don't think there's that much of a drop off. They know their assignments. They know what to do. But big picture, everything, it's year five. There's no reason, as you said, the defensive secondary stats should be 117th in the nation. It should be, if anything, mid range, in the 50s, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s. I'll even take that. Recruiting has had a little bit to do with it, but I mean, this is Chip Kelly from Oregon, where he had both a stout offense and defense that was complementary of each other. You know, the offense would be on the field, you know, really quickly scoring, and then the defense would have to have a little bit more time. But they, you know, had athletes. They substituted a lot more. It was just a well-oiled machine. You know, every time Oregon was on the field, offensive or defensively, we just haven't seen that at UCLA, and that has been the downfall of you know what Chip has been trying to do here. Yes, he lost by 3 points to USC, but how do you account for the loss to Arizona? How do you account for losing an onside kick and losing a possession against Oregon? You can't. Those are, although that special team, that's a little off, but it's even still, that gives Oregon an extra possession, and that puts UCLA's defense back on their heels again. It's kind of head scratching that it is not at least anywhere near the elite status at the offenses.
Yeah. And I think for me personally, and I want to get your guys' opinions after this, I was about like a 99% sure chance that I wanted Chip to be the guy to lead this team into the future, you know, going into that Arizona game. I still am in favor of keeping him around. I think he is an offensive genius. I don't think there's four guys in college football that like, you know, four other guys that I would take over Chip Kelly, like out of all the coaches that can coach offense, his running games, his schemes, the spread offense he's kind of, you know, grouped together, whether he's at Oregon or he's brought down to UCLA. I mean, it is something fantastic and something that you won't be able to teach to another coach. But it's just the defensive side of the football that has kind of knocked me down to about 75 to 70% sure chance that, you know, I want Chip to be the guy moving forward after these last two losses. Mike Regalado, Jake Merrifield. I'm going to go back to Mike first. If you're the athletic director, give me a percentage from 0 to 100 on how hot that seat is for Chip Kelly.
I would say, you know, maybe like 30%. He did enough to cool it down from last season. You know, the wins against Washington and Utah, you know, that they helped that, but I mean, if he wants to stay here long-term, if he wants to turn this into a championship team, he has to figure out, you know, something to anything in regards to fixing the defense. That's the main thing, but I would say about 30%.
Jake, my guy, what are we going with?
You know, I'm, it's funny, Will, I was like you, I was very, very, you know, kind of in favor of, you know, seeing where the Chip Kelly era goes a couple games ago. Now I don't think I'm really leaning either way. I'm kind of agnostic about it, right? I could buy into another couple of years, or if they want to blow them out, I think I'd be fine with that as well. So I'm just going to lay it right there at a 50-50, coin flip it, because I really do think that there is a toll that's taken on the program when you get the opportunity to have, you know, the big opportunity that they had and then have them fall flat like they did. Any equity that he, you know, he already had I don't want to say, you know, Chip Kelly did himself, but the way the program had performed since he got here had really divided the fan base quite a bit. I know all three of us had been like, oh yeah, you know, support Kelly or whatever. And we're kind of behind what they were doing, but there's a lot of the fan base that wants nothing to do with it. And that the truth, you know, that statement is just look at who has been coming out to the Rose Bowl for the last 2 years, right? The first time that place has been moderately filled has been this last SC game. And before that, you know, Chip Kelly era, it's been, you know, nobody in the stands pretty much. And that's something that hasn't happened in UCLA football since the, you know, since its inception, you know, almost 100 years ago. I mean, that's how bad it was at that low of a point. So, you know, I'll say, you know, 50-50. And as far as what I want to see, I'm kind of on the fence with that. And I still, you know, guys, I will say the way that they came out this year and the way that they were playing both offense and defense, I thought it was complimentary. I kind of like the playing the bend but don't break. I'd like them to be a little stiffer in the end zone, you know, but I don't have nearly as pessimistic a take on how the defense has performed this year relative to you guys. And that's okay. I mean, reasonable lines can differ. But with that being said, look, we were on the cusp. They had the best opportunity they've had since 1998. And then the air was let out of the balloon, you know, one big wet fart. And that has to have some consequences to how fans are going to view your program.
That is the truth right there. Mic drop from our guy, Jake Merrifield, after that one. I want to end, you know, the UCLA USC notes on a positive spin. Michael Ezeke had a hell of a game. And what I've noticed about UCLA USC games is Chip Kelly kind of tabs a guy to break out in these games. If you look at the last 3 years, the coming out party for Greg Dulcich was the 2020 game during the pandemic, 167 yards, 2 touchdowns. Last year was Kaz Allen, the kickoff return, the 3 catches, 118 yards, and 2 touchdowns. And this year is Michael Ezeke, 4 catches, 44 yards, but 3 touchdowns. Had that big-time 20-yarder on that beautiful play-action pass from Dorian Thompson-Robinson where he looked towards the right sideline. Hit Ezeke, and then he had 2 other ones in the red zone, you know, which was, I think, is just super impressive that he can move like that in such a tight window of space. We also do an NFL draft podcast here. Does this, in your opinion, give Ezeke enough juice to maybe where he can be a day 3 prospect after a 3-touchdown game against his crosstown rival? No bigger stakes. At 6'5", 252, I'm going to start with you, Jake.
You know, I don't think any one particular game is going to like move him up the board at all. I think Ezeke is a project. You know, you saw, you know, as great as he played against SC, you know, the game before that, I think it was Arizona, wasn't it? Where he had like 2 or 3 drops in the game on some pretty tough plays. So all the film goes up to the next level, right? Not just the good stuff. So, you know, and it's not like in high school where you can lie about your height and weight and all your stats. And then sometimes they vet it and sometimes they don't. Cause I was 6'6" in high school. I'll tell you, I'm not quite that tall anymore. But it's just one of those things where I think that he's going to be one of those guys that goes in there as a prospect. And one thing the Bruins have done great, you know, in the last 20 years is putting guys in the NFL more than SC, more than most teams in the country. And they have a lot of guys that come out that maybe are kind of underrated. Probably the, you know, the most notable of that is one of my favorite all-time players. Maurice Jones-Drew comes out in Reggie Bush's shadow and then is just, you know, a 10 times better of pro. And there's been a lot of stories like that for the Bruins over the years. I know one of your favorites is EK Eric Kendricks, right, Will? So as far as Ezeke goes, I don't think this is going to make too big of a bump in his prospects. The guy that I'm still laughing at, I think during the Oregon game, somebody rated Charbonnet as a low pick or whatever. Charbonnet to me, he's got the juice. That's the guy I'm picking in my fantasy draft next year for sure. Hopefully with my last pick because nobody else is on him. But Sharps is my guy for the NFL, I think.
Yeah, did you say we rank Charbonnet as low? Because that was are all on Charbonnet.
No. I during one of the telecasts, they had stupid Kuiper on there or something, and he was like, "Oh yeah, I think he's like a he's going to be like a a contributing back or something." No, I think Sharp's got the juice.
Yeah, Todd McShay. I mean, he's buying crack behind the Rose Bowl. It is just, I mean, it's absurd because you look at. It's like, are you watching what we're watching? Especially he was at that Stanford game.
Exactly.
Where he probably had his best game of the season. Yeah, for anyone that, you know, follows the Bible and, follows our show, Charbonnet has passed Greg Dulcich is now my all-time favorite Bruin. So that is my guy moving forward. I think he can be, you know, a second-round pick in the NFL draft if he plays his cards right. I mean, Chip Kelly, he doesn't really hand out endorsements to a lot of his players. He's kind of that tough love kind of coach. You hear him talk about Charbonnet. It's like his glowing, you know, son that was just born. I mean, it is a proud father when he's speaking to the likes of Charbonnet. So that's my guy heading to the pros too. Iron Mike, give me your takes on Ezeke, because I think he's got the size. He's got the skills. I mean, maybe a seventh round pick, if he's lucky, I think there's a chance maybe he can move up some boards, maybe with the likes of adding upon this game to the Cal and maybe a bowl game appearance.
I think that's what he needs because, yeah, just similar to Jake, you know, having one game. I mean, he's had some good performances throughout the season, but nothing that stood out like Dulcich or Charbonnet or even Joshua Kelly a few years ago. So I think he really needs to put up some numbers the next two games, as well as have, you know, just a hell of a, you know, if he's invited to the combine, or have just, you know, one heck of a senior day, prospect day. I forgot what it's called. But yeah, he needs to find a way to get more attention, towards him. But, you know, like right now, I think it's DTR and Charbonnet, that are going to be, the two highest picked Bruins in this draft. And there are a couple other guys that could sneak in there too. You know, maybe John Gaines, maybe Raekwon O'Neal. It just depends, you know, it kind of depends on what teams want, what they're looking for, if they fit into their scheme. But as far as Ezeke, I think he has a little bit more work to do, but yeah, I don't think this draft class is going to be bare of Bruins.
Yeah. I got two more questions for you. One is about Cal and one is just a music-based question. I know we're all music lovers, so I'm going to dive into that. The question about Cal is, how concerned should we be that this is a letdown game? You know, no Pac-12 championship, no chance at making the playoffs anymore. You know, you just lose a heartbreaker to your rival. Are you motivated to get back out on the field and take that ninth win? I know it's Cal. I know they struggle. They're, for as bad as UCLA is in pass defense, Cal's 127th. There's 131 teams in passing yards allowed. That is not good in any slight. Mike, on your scale, how worried should UCLA fans be about going into a Cal game after a massive, massive letdown of the past few weeks?
I don't think they should fear a letdown. I mean, if anything, one thing that has been apparent with Chip Kelly teams is that they finish, they fight to the end. You know, they might be down 20 points, but they're going to finish. And I think they want to finish off the season, especially after two losses. I think they'll be okay with at Cal.
Love to hear it. Jake, need your thoughts, brother. Where are we going?
Well, number one, I don't know if any Bruin fans are gonna be worried or not worried, because I think the apathy set in, and I think there's, you know, it's a good thing it's on a Friday when everybody's got the day off. Otherwise, I don't know if anybody watching the game actually. I know we all will, because we're sycophants. We're in it no matter what. But as someone who's paying tuition to Cal, my daughter's up there now. I'm optimistic about I view the Bears with a little more optimistic light. I think that if the Bruins go up there and do have a letdown, Cal absolutely can beat them and will beat them, just because, you know, they can get it going on occasion. They got it going against Stanford at the end of the game, and they're coming in off a high, whereas the Bruins are absolutely completely deflated after that game, I think. And honestly, I don't know who's going to play in that game. I mean, I don't know if I were DTR, if I were Charbonnet, I don't even know, you know, why I would play in that game, honestly, as great as their Bruin careers have been. Although I'd love to see him play again. With that being said, I don't know what to expect from the Bruin team in the next game. They've had two of the most deflating losses, certainly of the, you know, any player on the team that's on there right now hasn't had a more deflating loss than the last two they've had against Arizona and OSC. So who knows how they're going to respond? They responded terrifically in the SC game. They played an amazing game, a fantastic game, but is it all gone now? I don't know. You know, because now what you got to look forward to is a trip after the day after Thanksgiving up to Berkeley. It's going to be cold and, you know, and nasty, probably, you know, coldish, you know, as much as the Bay Area can be. And then you're looking at whatever kind of dumb bowl game you're going to get into. So I don't know how hyped any of these guys are for this game. So I could see them coming in and just saying, geez, we aren't going to lose another game. And if both teams play at their peak potential, UCLA will win hands down. But who knows if we're going to see that Bruin team.
Who knows? And the last question I got for you guys, man, normally I ask, you know, the guests that come on, what have they been binge watching? Are they watching on Netflix, you know, Apple TV, things of that nature? I know you guys are music guys, man. That was a big conversation point we had at the Pac-12 media. I was lucky enough to go on Iron Mike's radio show talking about music and stuff that inspired me. And I've got a very tough question for you guys, but there's no outs. You got to answer. You got to go with your gut feelings. I'm going to start with you, Jake. You are on a deserted island. You have, you know, shipwrecked, and you have found a record player where you can hypothetically play three records, and you get to choose whichever ones those are. I think I know one of them because I know you're a Strokes fan, but I know you got a couple more to go on that, Jake. Jake, you got three records on a deserted island that you need to play. Where are you going and why?
So I probably I'm bad with album names. Unfortunately, when I was a kid and I had, cassette tapes and CDs, I knew all the album names, but now, you know, I've been on iTunes for the last 15 years. So it all kind of blends together, but I think, help me out. Strokes first album is This It or This Is It, right?
This is it. Classic. Yeah, so album.
I'm going with that one. Although I love their fourth album, the one with Juicebox on it, probably almost as much, but I'll go with the first album. It's amazing. And then, my second album, probably, I mean, it's very, very hard, but for brevity's sake, I'll just go Led Zeppelin 1. That's one of the albums I grew up with. It's got some of my favorite songs on there, although, you know, really pretty much any Led Zeppelin album. I grew up a big fan of theirs. Got to see Jimmy Plant, Robert Page do their last concert at the Forum. It was awesome. I didn't get to see Led Zeppelin. I got to see Plant and Page, which is very cool, and they played all the hits.
Those are then, two guns, man. That's pretty impressive. So
yeah, no, I appreciate that. And then my last one is probably going to be probably Public Enemy, Fear of a Black Planet. I love hip hop as well. Grew up a fan of the New York stuff, and you know, it's hard to go one way or the other as far as hardcore or like the more kind of Tribe Called Quest type stuff, you know. But I'll go that album because I love that album, and it's very meaningful to me. I love the PE.
Three home runs from Mr. Jake Merrifield. He's got excellent taste in music. I know Mike Regalado's got great taste in music. I'm excited to see where he goes with this exercise. Three albums. You can't get out of it, Mike. Gut feeling. What are those three albums for you?
Blur, self-titled, the one with just a fantastic album from start to finish. Pulp's Different Class and The Murder City Devils in Name and Blood. Just albums that have just stuck with me. Just bangers from start to finish. You have some albums that are, you know, they have good songs and then they're like, oh, okay, I'm going to skip over this. No, all three of those albums I can listen to straight through.
The Murder City Devils sound very much like their band name.
Damon Albarn is a genius, man. So I totally agree with the Blur. Loved his stuff with the Gorillaz moving forward. I actually went to the Elton John concert the other night at Dodger Stadium. That was fantastic, man. That was a bucket list show for me, so I was very excited to see him. I got three albums. Big hip-hop guy like Jake, I'm going the Black Album by Jay-Z. It's a big one for me. I'm going Voodoo by D'Angelo. I got to have that, like, soul music to kind of relax me. And I'm going 40 Ounces to Freedom by Sublime.
Sublime.
Great vibes. You know, I'm on a beach somewhere, you know, I'm just missing the corona at that point. You know,
so the Sublime lead singer before he passed, may he rest in peace. He actually put my wife, then my future wife, onto the stage to save her from a pit at Harry C's in Riverside way back in the day. So, yeah, I go way back with Sublime as well.
Dude, your wife is the coolest person I know. So that is pretty amazing. Jake, Mike, I can't thank you guys for coming on enough. This was really fun. We got to do this again. The Bruin Bible, What's Bruin? Podcast crossover. Bruin Bible, we are official.